Well, it is a beautiful day here in Chicago. It is sunny. It is it's bright. I'm looking at the window of my studio right now, and the trees are fully bloomed, and it just warms my heart this time of year. Now, I know in other parts of the world, it's sort of fall right now and probably getting cold and probably getting preparing to be winter. So sorry if that's your experience right now, but I'm super excited to welcome spring and summertime. Welcome to On Strategy Showcase. I'm Fergus O'Carroll in Chicago. Here's a clip from today's episode.
The platform was to make yourself comfortable. And it's the thought that they have focused on making people feel comfortable for generations. But the greatest benefit of that mission is that when people are comfortable, they can be themselves. And this is an increasingly important cultural idea, that we should all be able to show up as our full selves and express who we are rather than feeling pressure to fit into, you know, a form or an expectation. So that emotional benefit of being comfortable is the thing that unlocks our personal style.
That's Elizabeth Paul. She is Chief Strategy Officer of the Martin Agency. It's become a recurring theme on our show, the idea of reframing a brand's core value. Maybe it's become sort of forgotten. Maybe it's become stale. Or maybe, like today's example, it's lost its relevance to an emerging generation. If your proposition, in this case, comfort, is tied to product, then simply reframing that functional benefit in a functional way may well fall on deaf ears or completely turn off existing customers. What we hear in today's episode is the story on how, in addition to maintaining its practical proposition, Hanes, which is an apparel brand, expanded the lens through which that proposition could be viewed. In other words, in addition to practically relevant, the goal is to become culturally relevant. And the work is wonderful. You really have to see it. You know, a lot of times we drop in spots where we have sort of a narrative or a voiceover that can explain the context of the work. But in this case, it's not. It's really just a musical backdrop. So I would encourage you to go to our website and check it out. You can see it at onstrategyshowcase.com. The spot is beautiful and so many layers to it that seeing it, maybe even in advance of listening to this, would be really helpful. As always, you can follow me on LinkedIn or connect with me at hello@onstrategyshowcase.com. And let's not forget to support our sponsors. They make it possible for you to hear this show for free. Please do support them with your business and with your clicks. Talk about them in your network. Because without them caring for and supporting the content we put out each week, this show would be a subscription model. And I know not too many of you like to pay for content. We're approaching close to 750,000 cumulative downloads of the show, and its popularity is exploding, which is phenomenal. And it is really sponsors that are making all of that possible, and I thank them. If you want to show your support for this show by becoming a sponsor, or if you're a media planner whose client's offering would make our listeners' lives just that little bit better, you can download our 2023 sponsor kit on our homepage at onstrategyshowcase.com. So here are Elizabeth Paul, Chief Strategy Officer, and Rushil Nadkarni, Associate Creative Director of the Martin Agency in Richmond, Virginia. This is the story behind the repositioning of Hanes. We'll be right back.
Hello and welcome to
the most effective advertising campaign in the world.
Which is this campaign for the Master of Advertising Effectiveness, a six-week online program in partnership with WARC that'll give you a next-level understanding of the evidence-based principles of advertising effectiveness. The very same principles we've used to create this.
The most effective advertising campaign in the world.
Over the coming years, you'll experience a campaign that's perfectly budgeted and targeted over both the short and long terms and replete with emotion, distinctive assets, and most importantly, creativity. It will at some point result in you visiting our website, mae.academy, signing up, becoming a master of advertising effectiveness, and also becoming a piece of hard evidence that this is in fact
the most effective advertising campaign in the world.
So it is. It's great to have the Martin Agency back on. When I saw this campaign a couple of weeks back when it broke, I was just stunned by this spot. I loved everything about it. It was so cinematic. It was so wonderful. And everything down to the soundtrack just sort of lifted my spirit. So I reached out to Elizabeth and wanted to have her come on and talk about it. And we're so lucky to have not only Elizabeth as a strategy lead, but also to have Rushil come on and talk about and represent the strategy team or the creative teams on this. So welcome to both of you. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks. We're excited.
Thank you, Fergus. Thanks for having. Very happy to be here.
Yeah, a real pleasure. And I'm excited to talk about this because I remember, Elizabeth, the Hanes brand from many years back. It's a very popular brand, and I was surprised to see that it's not only a domestic U.S. brand, but it's international. But maybe to start off, we just talk about where this brand started and a little bit about what it is for those who don't know it yet.
Yeah, sure. So Hanes was founded in 1901. I believe it was originally the Hanes Knitting Co. But in terms of, you know, where they show up, they're in 9 out of 10 American drawers. I really can't think of many brands in this country or any country that have that level of penetration and familiarity over time. But they are a global company. Technically, Hanes Brands International. They have, you know, brands like Champion, you know, under their belt, which not everyone may know. But then they also have global brands like Bonds in Australia, which people in the U.S. may not be as familiar with. But they really are a portfolio of companies, with Hanes being, you know, the most known, the most loved, and certainly having the highest penetration, which is great in a lot of ways. But I think sometimes familiarity breeds unfamiliarity, and people know you so well, they don't see you anymore. And so there was a real opportunity to kind of shake up how people saw and thought about the brand.
So what is it that the brand manufactures and sells?
So it's predominantly innerwear. You know, you have things like bras, underwear, socks, tanks, the iconic white tee. We did a hoodie hotline fun thing for them in social last year. So that's Hanes itself. And they are continuing to get into not just innerwear, but, you know, all things comfort, that being what the brand is known for. Other brands in the HBI portfolio go beyond that in some places. Again, Champion being an example. But this work was for the Hanes brand.
So when you look at how it's been marketed historically, how would you describe it?
Well, we've been working with Hanes for 17 years. And while the very early days of that relationship did have some work that focused on brand awareness, you can think about the iconic "Look Who We've Got Our Hanes On Now" with Michael Jordan and other celebrities. Those were the early days. But for most of the time we've been working with them over the last two decades, their marketing was very much driven by product innovation. So Hanes is the inventor of the tagless tee, the seamless sock, the X-Temp technology that cools your undercarriage, the total support pouch that lifts and separates. And so they have been ruthlessly focused on product innovation in the name of comfort. And so really what would happen is every year, every other year, when there was a launch, we would get a brief that was about, you know, kind of dramatizing the new technology. And there was a lot of you know, winning the battle of, you know, record sales for a launch, but the war of brand equity, when you're really just focused on that kind of feature function, new news on a regular basis, can start to wane. And I think they were starting to see that in their brand equity scores.
So when you look at the typical Hanes buyer, how would you describe him or her?
Well, again, I think to be in 9 out of 10 American drawers, you know, you're supporting a lot of people. And certainly, you know, they have women's product, they have kids' product, both of which I have at my house, but their men's product was their flagship and where they had the majority of their equity and penetration. And like a lot of iconic brands, you know, consumers age and you need the brand to continue to renew its relevance. And honestly, a lot of their innovations in recent years were men's focused, like the X-Temp technology or the total support pouch. And so most of their messaging focused on their men's products. So even though they've continued to make and sell great products really for the whole family, their core user was male, and their equity with other groups was really shifting. Gen Z didn't have strong associations with them. And women, you know, kind of credited them for function over form. But some of that is they weren't really talking to women because the messaging was focused on innovation in their menswear product.
When I look back or think back on the category, it seems to me that, Elizabeth, what's happening is there's been this evolution from function to fashion over the years. And I think I've seen that even in the Hanes brands, but even in, but if you look at that spectrum, would you agree that there's sort of Hanes was the functional, many in the categories were going to the fashion and the style, but then Hanes has sort of made a pretty aggressive move in that fashion and style direction over the last few years?
It's a great insight. I mean, I think largely the category has grown incredibly fragmented. You know, gone are the days where it was, you know, Michael Jordan in the white tee versus the man in the giant fruit costume with a little bit of Victoria's Secret for sexiness and maybe Calvin Klein for premium style, but there wasn't a lot in between. Today, you still have those historic players who have a lot of equity, but you also have the explosion of DTC brands like Tommy John's and MeUndies. You have private label, you have brands like American Eagle that started in the clothing space, but then launched something like Aerie, which becomes a major player with Gen Z. You have specialty brands like Thinks and NYX. Like, it is a much more fragmented business marketplace than it was for a very long time. So I think the landscape is more cluttered. And from a marketing perspective, I would argue, maybe a little biased, I don't think there is a ton of great work in this category. I think most of the competition and most of the innovation has been functional. And, you know, the two drivers of the category, you know, remain things like comfort and value. But I do think you're exactly right. Style is a really big driver, and it's not something that Hanes was getting nearly enough credit for kind of in the average marketplace. But there was this interesting opportunity where, you know, they are icons of timeless American style, like the white tee. Think about James Dean in that t-shirt. It's no longer just a plain white tee. And, you know, Supreme sells Hanes socks on their website. And so part of the conversation we were having is that this brand has this kind of latent iconicity that we weren't yet leaning into in the advertising, but we felt like we had a right to win there because it is authentically something that, you know, people who either focus on timeless style or like to mix high and low love the Hanes brand. But that's not something that they were getting credit for. It was more of like a little inside secret.
So the Hanes brand, as I understand it, is it's really been built on this proposition of comfort. And comfort has been associated with the practical value of comfort. And what's really kind of cool about this work is you've kind of messed that up a bit, shaped that, kind of shaken that up a lot. Because you had to sort of, you chose to redefine what comfort is through the lens of a new generation. So tell me about that. In terms of, was the business problem that you felt that the younger generation wasn't connecting with the proposition and therefore the brand was aging as its audience aged? Or how would you define what the core business problem was?
Yeah, in many ways, our brief was to future-proof the brand. And to make sure that they weren't, you know, the brand wasn't aging as the audience aged, but actually, you know, if you're a brand that survives over a century and is still number one, you know, they're number one in comfort, then there clearly is something perennial in what you're doing. But we needed to make sure we were being intentional about future-proofing the brand. That was a lot of the brief to us. Funnily, one piece of research we saw was that sometimes their male audience felt self-conscious, like the women in their life were judging them for wearing Hanes. You know, like you were phoning it in to just wear Hanes because they weren't getting enough credit for style. And so we knew that that was a battleground that we needed to make some serious traction in.
Anything you'd add to that, Rishi?
Yeah, it was you brought up a really good point about the journey from function to fashion, right? Fashion, which can be interpreted just in very technical terms as form. So fashion and form, I think even there probably has been a time where Hanes was super successful in a world like just about 20 years ago, which wasn't as visual as it is today, right? Think about social media. Everything is seen and shown. And I guess you got away with products that were just primarily functional and brought you comfort, and they checked off the three boxes of this was it feels good, it's affordable, it's comfortable, great, you don't have to do anything more. But as the newer generation is probably living in a much more visually digital world, the whole side of fashion and style started to surface to the top. The need, it's not just about feeling it inside of yourself, you want to show it. And it's just the same way as we've seen a dramatic shift in the food industry. It's not just it's not just important to make food that tastes good, but you need to be able to plate it so people can take a picture of it, and that's how you like to show and share what you're having with your food. So I guess it's similar principles apply even to the whole journey from form to function, function to form, whether it's you call it style, you call it fashion, although we have defined fashion and style as two different things. And I guess Hanes fits more in the world of style as a building block of style because of how simple it is. It's a building block of you could put it under whatever you have and look absolutely fashionable. James Dean did it with just basic denims and a white tee and looked cool as hell. A lot of other people do it. Kendall Jenner does it now. It's just like very basics. And we call that like a very high-low style. But that's where like we saw a very interesting insight that the way a lot of the newer generation is using Hanes is in a very interesting manner that they can just put it on under the most expensive thing, the most fashionable thing, and they wear it with pride. So there is an inherent tone of style that's actually rising to the top that we're not embracing, or before this campaign, we hadn't embraced fully.
Yeah, it's so true because I think the way we used to think of underwear and basics as things that were covered up.
Yeah.
And so you always sort of you might wear an everyday brand such as what Hanes, for the sake of discussion, but let's talk about Hanes as an everyday brand. You might wear Hanes socks during the day, but when you go out to dinner, you go out for drinks, or you go out with friends, that there's different socks going on those feet is the way it used to be, right? Right. And same with underwear. There was this sense that underwear is outerwear in many ways, right?
That is so true.
We did, I think we knew from the very beginning, like our belief was that Hanes had actual incredible iconicity that was not being tapped into by just focusing on, you know, dramatizing a specific innovation. And we said, hey, you have this latent iconicity, but we have to act like an icon. And we really just looked into what that looked like. And we set out with a goal of saying, okay, you have all this functional equity and comfort. We don't want to say you stand for something else for a lot of reasons. Like one, it's true. You have worked hard to build that equity. It is a criteria of choice. But what we need to do is we need to elevate comfort from a functional benefit to an emotional benefit and ultimately to a cultural benefit. And we need to understand the role of comfort in culture. So we did some really great research with one of my favorite research companies, which is called Nonfiction. And we asked them a few questions. One of the questions we asked was, what does comfort mean to Gen Z, knowing that, you know, we really needed to kind of reignite the brand with this younger audience? And two, what does comfort mean in culture right now, which can be encompassing of Gen Z, you know, but also broader than that. And that was really fun. You know, we looked at a lot of different, you know, kind of hypotheses on things that feel very uncomfortable and how our role with comfort as a society is changing. One of the things we found that was specific to the Zillennial, or at least I would say they're probably the tip of the spear in this in culture, is that what makes them uncomfortable is feeling like they have to edit themselves to make other people comfortable. There is this very high value on authenticity and individualism. They're not looking for validation, but rather there's a premium put on freedom. You know, so for them, what made them uncomfortable were things like, you know, self-censorship, et cetera. But one of the things we really found is that for them, discernment is the ultimate badge. Like they don't pride themselves on the surface level of what they buy, but they pride themselves on the thought that went into it. So they're quick to pair YSL, you know, sneakers with a Hanes t-shirt, because to them, that's a badge of discernment. And you can look at things like, you know, fashion being defined by what feels good and not what just looks good, or the kind of like, you know, the ugly fashion trend, like the giant sneakers, not being a passing fad, because to this millennial audience, they bring the style, like they bring the X factor, and they want to put their imprint on it.
But given all of that, then Elizabeth, then what's the problem if they could? They're already mixing low culture, high culture. Were you just not in the consideration set?
I mean, I think there were. You know, we also do Hanes Social, and we do a lot of influencers. Like, there have always been people who choose Hanes. I mean, even think about the Supreme collab, because it feels subversive or because it feels unexpected. So it was there as kind of a cultural undercurrent, but it was a very like, if you know, you know. And it seemed like an act of, I don't know, bravery or brilliance to flex a Hanes tee. But I wouldn't say that was widespread. I think that was happening with people who have the confidence and have the discernment to do that. But in some ways, it was a fading top of mind awareness problem. And so we really needed to become a brand that was being talked about and considered and in the conversation for this generation.
So when you look at, yeah, I love that point. It makes complete sense. So on the sort of the leading edge of culture, there's this sort of mixing happening. So part of what the opportunity is to drive that into more of the mainstream culture. And so, Rochelle, what was kind of going through your mind in the early conversations here? Because there's the practical side of comfort, and then there's this cultural side of comfort through a new lens, which I can imagine through conversations just began to build the level of excitement about what this could be. Because, I mean, it's a massively rich territory to be creatively playing in.
Totally. And what got us excited right from the get-go was, I think when the offering is simple enough, you can tell stories that are better. And so when you're talking about comfort, if the subject matter is the simpler the message, it, you know how it is, right? Like, it's so hard to say simple things sometimes. And if you're able to put a finger on what it is, the journey after that is easy. So, well, at least we knew one thing was comfort. And finding that little gap, the little journey that we had to do, seeing the undercurrents, as Elizabeth mentioned, about the way the newer generation is embracing style. So I think creatively, even we had to do something that Hanes hadn't done before, putting style right next to comfort, which feels weird to say. It's a brand. It's something you wear. Of course, it's going to go with style. But I think make it a part of your storytelling, story doing. And the way we see it was the more we investigated, you realize, wait a minute, comfort and style should be the two sides of the same coin. And it's not one or the other. It's always going to be one that fuels the other. When you feel comfortable, you can style yourself better. Or when you feel you're stylish enough, you'll probably feel comfortable. And Hanes was that coin that was facilitating both the sides.
It's interesting that I think maybe Calvin Klein and Nike were among the first to do this, where they were making the brand far more obvious on their garments and products, so that it became a sort of a signifier, recognizable projection of what you were wearing. Does Hanes, or has Hanes needed to do any refresh on product to make that brand more present? Because if I'm wearing it consciously, I want people to know what I'm wearing. And how do you signal that with basics and underwear?
Well, it's that whole phenomenon of, like, you know, you had the era of, you know, of the badge value in the 80s and 90s and early aughts. I still remember when the Ralph Lauren polo embroidery went from, like, only the really small one that was a quarter of an inch to the one that's 5 inches large. My youngest son's godfather, who is English, found that hilarious. He called it Ralph Lauren for the nearsighted, the farsighted. And then obviously we had a period of time where a lot of that went away, and even the brands that were known for that, it was considered a little more gauche. It was less stylish. And then there's been some evolution of it. To me, the presence of the brand doesn't have to mean, like, is the logo facing out necessarily. You know, there are instances with the Hanes original line, which we can talk about in a minute, where, you know, it might be on the band or other places like that. But I think making the brand more visual and more iconic doesn't necessarily have to mean redesigning it, you know, so that we have our version of, you know, the Hanes red flag for the nearsighted. I think one of the observations in our research was that often the most stylish people are the most comfortable with themselves. They're comfortable with their own style, their own perspective, the way they put things together, which they feel like they bring the style to the brand. And so that might include, you know, flying a logo, that might not, but they know what their favorites are. And they're proud to talk about them and share them.
Anything you'd add to that, Rochelle?
I think the whole part, I think when it came to just embracing the visual side of things, I think they looked back at some of their inventory as well when it came to the new, because if you see the spot, it talks about a specific product, although the clients were brave enough to give us permission to.
And that band on the underwear is, I mean, it's undeniably Hanes. So it's got that thick band, right? So I mean, in terms of a brand asset, that's it.
It's bringing back all the things that made Hanes Hanes. And I think it beautifully works into the whole product line, which is Hanes Originals. But I think one of the things they did such a good job at reinventing was the color palette of what some of these underwear are.
As you said, is
what was innerwear has become outerwear. You can wear a white sports bra under a leather jacket and you are going to be stylish as hell and ready for the night. So when you look at some of the color palettes, they've probably gone after every tone on the Pantone. And that was, I think, a very bold move and a very, very smart move they've made, because now your brand can be shown off. Now it doesn't have to sit under your t-shirt. Now it can make its way outside.
Yeah, now it also seems that the brand was ready for this refresh, because I mean, the products actually look great and look incredibly stylish, but the brand was sort of behind that. It wasn't. So obviously your objective is to sort of get these things lined up, lining up that product perception with brand perception. But you're right. It's so good for you guys that the product isn't trying to catch up with the brand.
100%. Yeah, I think we were very lucky in that, because while the brief was to reinvigorate the entire brand, and specifically Steve Bratsby is the CEO, when he briefed us on this project, he was like, I want people to see this and say, that's Hanes. Like, they really wanted that reappraisal moment. And we had this Originals line launching, which felt like the right moment, because, you know, it certainly has some of the things that you know and love, the Hanes sock, et cetera. But it had been redesigned from a silhouette perspective. They had new pieces like bike shorts or shorter boxer briefs. You know, it had just an explosion of color. It's the most colorful collection they've done since their founding. And then to your point, like the different treatment of the branding itself on the work. So all of it was coming together. These two projects were kind of in tandem, where it was, let's reignite the brand. And the best way to do that is to feature this line of product. The brand's reignition is bigger than just the Hanes Original.
So before we turn the corner to talk about the creative work, Elizabeth, can you kind of summarize what the strategic recommendation was and what the brand platform became for this campaign?
Yeah. So, you know, we've talked about kind of the strategic recommendation of elevating from a functional benefit and comfort to a cultural icon for comfort, and examining what that meant. And looking at all the things that stand against culture, because part of our methodology is to look at what a brand stands for, but also what it pushes off of. The platform was make yourself comfortable. And it's the thought that they have focused on making people feel comfortable for generations. But the greatest benefit of that mission is that when people are comfortable, they can be themselves. And this is an increasingly important cultural idea. That we should all be able to show up as our full selves and express who we are, rather than feeling pressure to fit into, you know, a form or an expectation. So that emotional benefit of being comfortable is the thing that unlocks our personal style. And so obviously we wanted to show up in a way, and we wanted work that celebrated the role of comfort in style and the role of comfort in community, which I think you see in the spot.
So Rochelle, you get this brief. Tell us about where you begin to go with it as a team, creative teams inside the agency, and then we'll talk about where you ultimately ended up.
As we were exploring what it means to be Hanes, as we started understanding, there is also a product that's going to be featured in Despite, of course, there's going to be a product. But what that product was, as we started learning more, Hanes Originals, just the word originals sparked a lot of intrigue and interest. For like, what could it mean if you know, we're talking about originals? Like, how far does this go? How long back was this invented, formed? And just, you know, go into the origins of what is this originals and when did it start? So I think that's where some of the initial workings started of, are we talking history? Like, what if we did talk history? What if we had a very interesting story to retell of how things might have gone on with some of these products in play right now? And if we went back to where it all began. So that's where some of the initial workings of the invention of comfort started. And the invention of comfort even became an interesting topic because we were talking about the idea of comfort and how it was invented. We weren't talking about the product per se. And that was some very conscious decisions to stake a claim in some of the bigger things that Hanes needed to stand for to pay off a bigger message at the end of that story. So that's when we started exploring, like the moment we realized we have a product called Originals, we're going to go a few hundred years back and reimagine this story as to who were the first young people at the time, the Gen Z of 1901, the young people at the time when they came across the first Hanes, what would that have gone like? And that just...
And this is what's interesting here about it as you answer that, is you, because we're really talking about the definition of comfort or the way comfort or being comfortable is being expressed in modern culture. So you could have, Elizabeth, gone straight off of that idea of executing and coming up with ideas that are expressed in modern culture comfort. Mm-hmm. But you guys went in the opposite direction, as Rushil is saying. You went a century ago. And I'm curious, did you guys explore creatively in the modern day concepts and ideas as well as where you ended up?
Yeah, I'll be honest, like this was not in our first round of work. Some of the first round of work, and Rush, tell me if I'm remembering this correctly, I think maybe went too high fashion, because while comfort was our equity, style was the ground that we needed to claim. And we had the insight work that actually said those two things are not as far apart as you think you are. This is not a repositioning from we stood for comfort, now we want to stand for style. We need to show how being comfortable in who you are, in your style, and your, you know, what have you, is what unlocks style. But the early round of concepting, I think some of the ideas were too high fashion, or felt like a departure from the Hanes that you know versus a reimagining. And while we didn't want work that was incremental, like we wanted work that would make people say, wow, that's Hanes, we also wanted it to be believable for the brand. And so much credit. I love it when creative teams come back with something that I just never would have thought of in a million years. And this is definitely one of those cases because there's so much subtlety. Like I love that question they asked of like, well, who is the Gen Z of 1901? If we're talking about originals, and what constraints were they fighting against? Because it might actually be that it is a perennial sense that the emerging generation is pushing off of the constraints of the day. And the audience we're talking to today is definitely pushing off of cultural constraints, but the constraints of 1901 looked different. And so in some ways, celebrating what is timeless about that might be the most contemporary thing you do. I never would have had the imagination for that, but that is definitely the magic of the creative teams.
So Rushil, tell us about that. That's the idea of, you know, going from sort of the high fashion of today and then going back in time. And truth be told, what's amazing about this campaign and about the film in particular is it actually does both. It starts off very period, but then it sort of drags the viewer into the comparison of high fashion modern day, in my opinion.
Yeah, it is. If you, Fergus, if we take out the filter of 1901, this story can still stand even today, right? the story of someone deciding what you should wear, what you should look like, what is comfortable for you or not. This story can even stand the test of time 100 years from now. So, but I think going back was a conscious decision because that allowed Haynes to own that little piece of history that they've never talked about. As we start talking 1901 and Gilded Age, there's also a lot of very popular TV series and movies that have come out there that have already done the homework and set the stage for the appetite for that kind of royalty and the style that existed back in the day. And all of it was kind of informing itself that when we said, oh my God, what if we did go back to 1901? And would it be like our Bridgerton moment? Could we tell a story? And if we have to tell the story, then let's start looking at what, you know, fashion was at the time. And it was the sentiments have always been the same, just body morphing, body dysmorphia, just force yourself into tiny things because that's what traditionally...
I would love you, while you're starting to describe it, why don't you go ahead and describe the spot and then I'm going to drop it in. So tell us what people see as they watch this. Give us like a 30-second description, storyboarded kind of what people see when this spot opens up.
Yeah, it is. It's set in 1901, Gilded Age. And this is when you talk about Gilded Age for some people who might not be aware of it, it was an industrialist boom that was happening in the United States. There was a lot of the rich were getting extremely rich and living a lavish lifestyle, a lot of mansions, a lot of money was just flying around. It starts in that unassuming world, and it shows the people that have been stuck in time. Well, to exist in this world, this is what you're going to have to look like and pose like and wear and show up like in places. You know, we talk about comfort being emotional and physical. You start to see how restraining some of that world is in 1901, until you see there's hints and little Easter eggs of this little trunk that is making its appearance, that's bringing what's about to change everything after that. And in that trunk lies a lot of new Haynes. There is one rebel who has gotten a pair of Haynes and has gotten their hands on Haynes. They decide enough is enough and they leave.
But let me describe it a little bit, a part of it, which I think is so critical. Anybody who's ever watched like a period show, Gilded Age show, Downton Abbey or Bridgerton, and you see how formally dressed everybody is, and you see them in very formal occasions, all sitting around this room where there's a performance of music, or they're sitting at dinner, and they're dressed in what appear to be 15 layers of clothing, cinched waists, bow ties, formal wear. And you're watching that, and you're thinking, how the hell did they function like that? I can hardly get through a summer in a t-shirt. So what you're doing here, that's also what you're saying, is that was the definition of being comfort. That was the definition of comfort and acceptance in society at that time. So a lot of this spot is setting up that sort of reflection on our sort of what was sort of status or acceptance or what was popular in culture.
I think you have it's a great insight there, Fergus, that it is showing what constraints were normal for the era, and obviously through the lens of clothing. And fortunately, you know, between, you know, Hamilton and Shondaland, we now have this great, you know, genre of reimagined history that has elements of what life was like, but also is more diverse and more representative and so on and so forth. And so we were able to play with that, which made it feel distinctively modern. But the core imagining, as you've captured, of like the constraints and people's standard for how comfortable they felt they could be was very different. And you can see some of the characters subtly chafing.
Exactly, yeah. And sweating, you see the sweat.
It was extremely stuffy. And as you said, like, we've gotten so accustomed to just walking around in our sweats all day now, but you had to take a walk and you had to wear 7 layers of clothing. You had to show up in all those hats with the feathers on it and just so many different layers. There's a very interesting saying from, I think, Mark Twain, which goes, life off vanity was a burden. He was referring to Gilded Age at the time. So yeah, it is that spots starts in that society, that extremely stuffy, and it's super torturous. Like when you see it, you start to feel it. You start to feel it through.
Absolutely. And then the revolution happens, right? The second half of the spot is about the revolt against this. Tell me how you guys imagined that.
Here's someone who decides enough is enough. They're going to get their hands on Haynes and break free. You see that sort of celebratory, rebellious contagion start to spread all around.
I wish we could, because there's so many layers to this film that you really got to watch it. So we may not be doing we're not doing it justice. You've got to watch the film to see this. It's cinematic. It's beautifully shot. You got to go watch it and see it for yourself. That said, how do you then start to push this into culture? Because the film will have a certain level of reach. Do you begin to repurpose some of it? Do you begin to leverage this sort of idea of being true to yourself, never goes out of style? Do you begin to push that out into culture and through comms? How have you been doing that, and where will it go?
Well, yeah, the platform around making yourself comfortable is bigger than a film. It's bigger than, you know, a product line launch. And you will see more work built on the same kind of repositioning and platform. For the launch itself, you know, you obviously had the film. We had a lot of digital assets. We are also Haynes Social Agency. So there were things that were both, you know, paid and organic that used some of the footage, but, you know, other pieces as well. And then we also had influencer kits that we sent out. I can share a picture of it if you want it for the blog, where they got, you know, this adorable box with the Haynes original line. It also had a teacup, it had a royal tea blend, it had, you know, candlesticks and a photograph, and the compendiary inside was like the tea on Haynes original, and again was kind of playing with era and was playing with genre. And so we had, you know, great influencers out there also extending the message. We have an activation idea we're excited about, haven't done it yet, so can't say more about that, but I think the hope is that this will be the spark that reignites the brand and really just the beginning of a campaign.
And so do you see yourself sort of maintaining some of that Gilded Age imagery in product ads? And will the next expression of this be a Gilded Age themed thing, or you might go somewhere completely different?
I don't think we've gotten that far, Rochelle. Rochelle, you go ahead and
we keep talking about this. We wish we could just turn this into a Netflix series and
yeah, exactly.
Make this
yeah.
as our own
episode story. Two, right?
Episode two of this. But I think we've been discussing about, you know, some of the conscious decisions we need to make, because the 1901 invention of comfort is a campaign, and it you know, just starts to scratch the surface of where make yourself comfortable can take you. And I think there's even when you look at the modern day, Fergus, is you'll realize there are so many things where, you know, who said to someone who may be older in age that you cannot dress young? Who said women cannot wear men's briefs? And it's that mentality. Like, who said that? Make yourself comfortable. And that is where we need to start, you know, pushing that line just beyond even the 1901, although we would love a sequel of just go through the ages. There's like, I think on one hand, there's a lot of heritage to own for Haynes with this, so we could tell so many, like what happened in the 1950s, what happened in the 70s, and come to modern day. But I'm also very excited to take this line, make yourself comfortable as a platform, in bring it to modern day, and where else could we take this? How many other things could we shake up in culture?
I agree. Yeah. And already, like, seeing the brand you know, getting talked about in Women's Wear Daily and People and Esquire and Fast Company and on the Today Show. Like, it's already helping people reappraise the brand, because again, what we set out to do from the beginning was not just say, hey, here's a new campaign, but to get people to think differently about what comfort means for this brand and for culture. And so we're excited about the journey we've begun.
So, you know, my last question on, from a strategy perspective, is when we talk about looking at this through the lens of Gen Z and the insights and unlocks that you got from the work, I think it's probably important to also point out that those insights are pretty universal across age. Would you agree with that?
I would. And one of the things I've thought a lot about, and I didn't think about it honestly until the teams brought this incredible idea, is just how timeless some of those insights are. Because when you're doing research with a cohort of any kind and you're saying, okay, what does comfort mean to this generation versus other generations, you're drilling for distinctives and you find them. You see the way that kind of millennial audience is pushing culture forward in the ways that they are demanding more space and more autonomy and more ability to show up authentically as their whole selves. But when Rushil and the teams behind this, you know, make us look all the way back to 1901, you realize that this is a perpetual revolution. That I love their question of who is the Gen Z of 1901. Every generation is pushing against the constraints of the day on this kind of wider arc of liberation. And so that's a really fun story to tell.
It is. Rushil Natkarni is Associate Creative Director at the Martin Agency. And as I said at the beginning of this, I don't expect you to be an Associate Creative Director for much longer. you'll call me when you're promoted, I'm sure.
Thank you, Fergus.
Brilliant work. And it's Elizabeth Paul, Chief Strategy Officer, both from the Martin Agency in Richmond, Virginia. Brilliant work. And thank you both for your time today. We'll all be watching to see what happens next.
Thanks, Fergus.
Thank you, Fergus. So honored to be here.
Thank you, man. And we'll see everybody on the next episode.